This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. I'll be glad to get back to your phone calls and emails shortly at 866-HEY-LARS. But I want to talk to our go-to medical guy, Dr. Henry Miller, who is a medical doctor, molecular biologist, now at the American Council on Science and Health. He was the founding director of the FDA's Office of Biotechnology. Doc, welcome to the program. And is it time we put a much sharper focus on moving American biotechnology forward? And can we do that safely?
We can certainly do it safely, Lars. The article that I just wrote on it was stimulated by a piece in Time magazine by Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Google. Very smart guy. And he predicted that we were on the verge of what he called a ChatGPT moment for biotechnology. And, of course, I've been around biotech since I was in grad school, really. And we've had a number of biotech moments over the past 40 years or so. The key is two things. Aggressive investment, primarily by the private sector, but basic research funded by the federal government, and getting out of the way with decent regulation, with science-based regulation. And we've had problems with the latter for these last 40 years, from FDA and EPA primarily, but also the Department of Agriculture. So those are the keys. It's not a mystery, but the regulatory agencies in particular have made quite a mess of overseeing the new products of biotechnology.
Now, in general, then, you mean the constraints are too tight or too loose?
The constraints have been way too tight and just ill-conceived. So, for example, FDA decided that it was going to take responsibility for regulating all genetically engineered animals, from mosquitoes to cows and fish. And they decided in their not-so-infinite wisdom that they were going to regulate them as though the animals themselves were new animal drugs and needed to be tested for safety and efficacy. But it's a regulatory model that didn't work well. And so the first product they tried to regulate was a fast-growing salmon called the Aqua Advantage. That grows 40% faster than its wild cohorts. And FDA took 13 years to decide what regulatory mechanism they were going to use to regulate this company's product. And then another 5 years to decide that it was indeed just like any other wild salmon. So that's just untenable. One of the next products was a genetically engineered mosquito to control mosquitoes in the wild that cause a number of tropical diseases.
Like Zika and that sort of thing? Or they don't cause them. Do they cause them or do they just convey them?
They convey them. That's a good distinction. They convey the organism that that causes the disease. And FDA took about 5 years diddling around with what requirements there were going to be just to do field trials. And these were mosquitoes that were self-destructing. They had a lethal mutation. And they were males that don't bite, by the way, males that would mate with females in the wild, and then the offspring would die because of a lethal mutation that was introduced. FDA took about 5 years deciding what requirements there would be just to do field trials, and then finally turfed it to EPA, which regulates pesticides, because these were, in essence, a pesticide, something that kills mosquitoes. So this is just untenable to treat important commercial products this way, and I think that's what we need to do. Going forward, we do.
Now, one of the products that has gotten a lot of talk, and I have to tell you something, Doctor, I'm not crazy at all about the idea, and that is lab-grown meat. Is there a good reason to have lab-grown meat? Because once that's possible to do on, say, a commercial scale, I'm worried about the idea that, that there are people out there who want to simply eliminate animals as a source of human food. And they say, well, if we can grow the meat instead of just, you know, having cows and horses, or not horses, that's for the French, only for the French, but chickens and pigs and all that, they're going to say then there is no reason to have animal husbandry at all. And I'm worried about them going down that track.
Well, first of all, it's not going to happen because the lab-grown meat will never be competitive price-wise, and also probably not in terms of taste and user-friendliness either. So I'm not worried about that. I'm willing to let the marketplace take care of that as long as we don't screw around with putting government preferences in on the scale in one direction or another.
But you know that that will be one of the ways they go. For example, why do I want to buy an electric car? Well, because the federal government is pouring, and I don't want to buy an electric car, but the federal government is pouring hundreds of billions of dollars into it to incentivize people to do it. And because politically, they want the electric cars. So they say, well, let's make it so that they are more attractive and gasoline cars are less available and less attractive. I'm worried about them using that same model when it comes to, say, ranch-grown meat versus lab-grown meat. Saying, well, now that we can do it, let's push everybody that direction. They've already done it on a number of things.
Well, there will be a few legislators who want to do such things. But, you know, animal husbandry is very important to a lot of U.S. states, from Texas to Iowa to California so on. And I don't think that the legislators from those states are going to let the feds get away with that kind of thing. It still requires our vigilance, as you're suggesting. We have to watch that and oppose that kind of thumb on the scale where we see it.
And what about biotechnology when it comes to human life? Because that's been abused as well.
In what way?
Well, the first use of, say, ultrasound, which is a perfectly useful technology for lots of things, when it got exported to India, they immediately had people saying, well, I want a boy. I don't want another girl in our family. And they used it to do selective, basically getting rid of all the girls and having a preference toward boys. And so use that as an example of where biotechnology can end up turning into some, I think, very amoral decision making.
You know, there's just so much we can do, Lars, about preventing or correcting people's moral misjudgments and deficiencies. But on the plus side, there will be very important breakthroughs, I think, in aging research, in slowing the aging process, and in.
You mean Joe Biden's going to be around longer than ever?
Don't remind me of that. Don't say that. we've had too much already. But we'll have better treatments for cancer and degenerative diseases like rheumatoid arthritis. We already have. 7 of the top 10 best-selling drugs are biotech drugs, which is quite remarkable. So the number one, Keytruda for cancer, is a $25 billion a year drug, and so on. 7 out of 10. So it's just a matter of getting out of the way and letting basic research by academics and then commercial research by the private sector moving this along.
That sounds reasonable. That's Dr. Henry Miller from the American Council on Science and Health.